What's up, everyone? And this is Next Level Thinking. What's up, everyone? It's another episode of Next Level Thinking, where we keep everybody motivated, inspired, and to take it to that next level. Today, I have a special friend and guest by the name of
Craig O'Sullivan.
Way from Australia, is that correct?
That's correct, Sydney, Australia.
Yes, so we're going international, next level. So before we get into the bigger topics, go ahead and tell the audience exactly more about yourself and what exactly you do in business.
So my main business is around helping people identify the value add message that's in their story. You know, through their experience, through their qualification, through their expertise, I help them draw out what is the message that audiences want to hear, what the audiences need to learn, and then I help them craft that into either a keynote presentation or into an event used for event marketing to promote their products or services.
You know, I'm glad you touched on that because I'm seeing now becoming more common that more top business owners are hitting on keys, keynotes and speaking in front of larger crowds, of course, for promotional. But it's almost like a great way to just stay in touch with your audience. It's like they're a chance to be able to like almost like grab you like, hand to hand instead of just like always on the internet, on the networks.
Definitely. And so I actually, communicating our message effectively and consistently, I believe it's one of the greatest strengths of the modern day entrepreneur. You know, back in the old school, it used to be all about big corporations, big brands, it was all about the logo. But now it's that social media has just got people so into people's personal lives. But people want to know the person. They don't want to know the business. And I mean, if you look at, the poster child of modern day entrepreneurialism is Gary Vaynerchuk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's one of my personal favorites.
he's a champion. And what I love about that is he typifies the fact that the dude has a company that is worth a couple of $100 million.
Oh, wow.
Yet what does he brand? Himself. Who does he talk about on social media? Himself, yeah. Because that's what people want to know. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. We're coming into this age, and I want to sort of almost dispel, because I come under the category of speaker coach or keynote coach, and I have so many people approach me saying, I want to be a motivational speaker, and straight away I want to slap them.
And, oh, wow.
I put them back in their place, because for me, motivation is, if you want to be a motivational speaker, you may as well become a drug dealer.
Oh, wow, that kid's caught me off guard.
This is strong. Go with me, Chris, right?
Okay.
Right, hear me out, right? Because motivation is a drug.
Okay.
Right? Motivation gives you a high, and then what happens after you go to a conference or a seminar after motivational speaking?
You kind of like die out. It's like get back to the low. Yeah.
You crash.
Yeah, crash.
Just like drugs, right? Not that you and I would know anything about drugs, but what I see on the movies is there's a high and then there's a crash.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do junkies do? They search for their next hit. And so they're desperate for their next motivational speaker, that next inspirational quote that's posted on Instagram. They're fiending for the next seminar, and they can only survive through motivation. So I believe that quote-unquote motivational speakers are simply just drug dealers.
I never would have thought about that until you had actually a great example, because that is very true. Because like after you listen to something that's very inspiring, and if you haven't really, caught on to like the key things, or you just don't have that drive, it's like, okay, you crash and you need that boost again.
See, motivation should be internal. Like, we should not be looking to other people to motivate us.
Man.
Otherwise, then we'll constantly be looking to other people to motivate us.
See, that's deep too.
And so motivation comes from within. We can't get it from a post. We can't get it from a seminar. We can't get it from anyone else. Now, that doesn't mean we can't be inspired by other people. And there's a big difference between inspiration and motivation. And unfortunately, a lot of people meld them all into the one, because on Instagram, they come up on under the same. You go hashtag inspiration, hashtag motivation. They're both the same post.
Yeah. Right. Like,
But motivation is what drives us. That should come internal. Because if it's something external, then we're relying on external factors. If we're relying on external factors, then we are relying on situations. If we've got enough money in the bank account, if we've got enough clients, if we're getting results, then we're only motivated by those external things. But motivation should come from within and be irrelevant to what's happening externally, what our situation is. Because if you're an entrepreneur, and I know we're going to lead into talking about entrepreneurialism, I get paid to speak for a living.
Awesome.
even I mess up my words, but we if we are an entrepreneur for any longer than a minute, we know that things don't always go the way we want them to go.
Yes, it's always about adapt. You know, if you don't know how to adapt, I don't know what to tell you. That's how I personally feel.
Exactly. If you're only motivated when there's money in the bank account, you can't be an entrepreneur. If you're only motivated when you're getting clients in, you can't be an entrepreneur.
If you're only motivated
by the fact that you're number one on Instagram, then you can't be an entrepreneur.
Now,
because it's not going to happen.
That right there is deep, because I feel like a lot of times people are looking for that, or that's like their only drive. And then when, as I just say in the word, well, kind of paraphrase what Gary Vee says, like when life hits you in the face, well, slaps you in the face, they're not ready for it. And then it's like game over.
Exactly. And I think for me, what made me a great entrepreneur is the fact that I was good at sports, and because I understood the hard work that went into getting that W. That I only got the W, let's say maybe once a week. I only got the W once a year at the big championship. I only got the W, you know, especially like I was swimming. I was at an elite level for swimming, and I trained for almost 8 hours a day for one event a year.
Sounds like you got one heck of a competitive spirit.
Exactly. And so I understand it's those knocks. It's the coach telling you, no, that was terrible. It's the pushing through the pain. It's all those things that made me a good entrepreneur. And yes, you're definitely right. I have a competitive spirit, and we need that to be an entrepreneur. So I've gone a little bit around. We've done a little bit of a roundabout around the difference between motivation and inspiration about
all kinds of the golden nuggets.
We can't be motivated by external things. We have to be motivated by internal, and that internal is our vision, like our mission, our purpose.
I gotta stop you on that one. Purpose. I feel like that is like the biggest thing, because it's, I feel like that and your why is what really is going to like push you to excel past any kind of expectations. It's like if your purpose and why is very strong, like for example, if you're doing this so you can put your mom into retirement, or you can build that community, or just, you know, help out your brother who may needs the funds for a surgery, it's like you're not going to want to quit, because you're like, I came so far to like look back now, like there is no turning back.
I love those analogies, Chris. Those are great analogies, because the thing is with our driving. Now, I also want to preposition something. I want to put a disclaimer in, because I feel that a lot of people are misled about purpose.
Okay.
What you just spoke about there was really good, because it was purposes in the moment. You know, like, ooh, I need to feed my family, or I need to support my brother who needs surgery. That's an immediate purpose.
Okay.
But then there's a lot of people, and yes, we need those, and you are spot on. But I think everyone is also, I suppose, maybe not quite discouraged, but they're constantly bombarded with this whole thing of, you must know your life's purpose. Now, you were speaking about a purpose in the moment, which, yes, everything we do must have a purpose, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that there's too many people out there that are feeling like they aren't motivated until they find their life purpose. Unless they have an emergency like you spoke about. Like, yeah, oh, hey, my brother needs surgery. What do I need to do? Like, but we shouldn't have to wait until those emergency situations to be motivated.
I agree.
And so I feel that there's so many people that are chasing, that are stuck, that are almost paralyzed because they don't know what their life purpose is, and they're thinking that when I know my life purpose, that's when I will. You know what? When I've got my life purpose nailed, that's when I'll move. When I'll take action.
And at the same time, I feel like that's very scary because that may take forever.
Can I tell you, Chris? Purpose?
No, I'm just saying,
a lifelong journey.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Like, it may take a while. For me, the first thing I do with every one of my clients is we go through a process of discovering what their purpose is. It's what I do. This year I'm about to release a free program to help people to discover their purpose. So purpose is awesome. Really important to me. However, I'll even say purpose drives everything in my life, and purpose is part of my slogan, purpose. But even I'm still on the journey of discovering what my full purpose is.
That continuous growth.
It is. And so I believe there's part of the, you know, part of my ethos when it comes to purpose is, purpose is not, once we fulfill our purpose, our life is over. That's when we die. It's not like, oh, your life is over now. I mean, when you have finally ticked every box that your life was designed for, that's when your life will end.
That's deep.
And so it is a constant journey. It is, okay, it's that next thing. This is my purpose for the next 2 years, for the next 3 years. This is what my lifelong purpose is. And then 6 months later, it sort of takes a little bit of a turn, or a major life event happens and things get turned upside down. And so I want to encourage people, don't wait until you know what your life's purpose is, because you never will have full confirmation of what your purpose is. Purpose is in the journey. Purpose is in the daily activity. Doing things purposefully and being deliberate and intentional about every day trying to find your purpose.
That's a quote right there.
It's not about actually finding your purpose. It's about on the journey of trying to find your purpose.
I think you just dropped like three different quotes right there. I get your social media team ready.
I'm a living meme, baby.
But that's definitely, I strongly agree with that, because it is a lifetime journey, because I definitely agree with that. Too many people just find these momentary kind of things, and when they get it, it's like, what's next? It's that big fear. Uh-huh. I feel like they hit them. It's like, what am I supposed to do? When they're not understanding, like, it's the process, the continuous learning, the challenge to make you stronger. Okay, like, okay, I did this, but what can I do to make it better? Or like, I helped create this big project, you know, and made a big difference in this community, but how can I make it even bigger? You know, it's just a lifelong journey. But, you know, as you've taken this journey, trials and tribulations, challenges, ups and down, you know, you should be enjoying that, because it makes, I feel like, in my opinion, life a thrill, like, worth living.
Yeah. Now, Chris, I don't know whether you're a religious man, but like, so I'm a Christian. Okay. And there's this theory, or not really a theory, but it's a behavior that some people in Christianity, or a lot of religions, right, have this attitude that religion is like a line in the sand, that your faith is like a line in the sand. Either you are a Christian or you're not a Christian. And a lot of Christians, any faith beliefs, but I'm just positioning this around that, is that there's this line in the sand, and almost there's this circle, right? And if you're in the circle, cool, you're good. If you're outside the circle, too bad. And that tends to be a really bad, that's what gives Christians a bad rap, because a lot of them tend to have that attitude that, oh, you're not in the circle, you're going to hell. Or you're not in the circle, you're not worthy. You're not in the circle, I'm not going to talk to you. It's sort of that attitude, but I like to look at it in another way. And the reason why I bring this up, and I'll bring it back to purpose, is I believe any faith system is not about whether in or out. It's simply, are you moving towards it or further away from it?
Now that right there is strong. You, man, all right, we got quotes, memes, we got a possible book coming out. You just indirectly saying this is all a promotion, but you ain't telling me. But on a serious note, like, I can agree on that one. And like, even like when I was younger, I felt that. And as I grew older, I started understanding it more, and, you know, believe I was like probably the only few that only thought that, but just hearing it from coming out of your mouth, it just like, you know, confirmation, because a lot of times it's like, just like drawing the line in the sand. It's like, either you're with this in this inner circle, and if you step outside these boundaries, then you're pretty much tossed aside as almost like a villain in some ways. And I don't know, everybody has own different views, but I don't really like that kind of thought process when people just toss people aside, because, you know, we all are gonna have faults and things like that. We're not perfect.
Oh yeah. Look, I've got my plenty. You want me to start listing? how long are you doing? But yes, you're completely correct. Like, we have this, and I used it as a Christian based, because I mean, obviously, religion is a very strong metaphor that everyone can understand. Mm-hmm. But everyone in every circle group, every culture group, every interest group has that same belief. You're either in or you're out,
right?
And it becomes so segregating. You know, we've got race, we've got color, we've got beliefs, we've got you know, sporting teams, we've got all this stuff. It's either you're in or out, and it's not about that. And this is our good. Bring it back to purpose. People think that purpose is about, oh, I'm in the circle now. I'm in the purpose circle, where it's not. It's just every day, am I making an intentional step towards building a better relationship with God, or did today I move further away from my relationship with God? With purpose, today, did I do something to pursue my purpose just a little bit more, or did I do something that actually distracted me and pulled me away from my purpose? And that's why I don't, like, you look at these gurus that are super, super purposeful, right? And they're like let's call them, they're the center point of the circle. They are so super purposeful that they are the purpose guru. Let me bring this back to religion, because it's easier to look at that. Right. You got all these really Christian people, like, they're perfect, all these perfect saints, right?
Oh man.
they're right in the middle of the circle, so to speak. And people tend to see that because those people are closer to the center of the circle, that they're better than the people that have maybe just become a Christian or just sort of started their faith. So there's this distance of like, well, I'm closer to the center than you, than not. And I want to dispel that as well, because it's not about that, like, because that saint, going back to my analogy of moving towards or moving away, that saint that day may have done something that pulled him further away from his relationship with God, and this person who just met Jesus may have just made their step towards. And I actually believe the people, no matter how far away they are, as long as they're making a move forward, they're better than the people that are moving back, no matter how close or far or successful or whatever than those people are at the top.
And I definitely agree with that. It kind of goes back to your previous statements, because one thing that bothers me the most is when, I know we're on this topic, is like when people just throw people outside that's not in the inner circle and just pretty much like condemn them and not noticing, like, even though it may be a small step, but at least they're moving forward in the right directions. And I feel like, you know, if people just realize and acknowledge that people are actually trying, and, you know, it may not be as fast as the next person, but as long as they're moving forward, you know, they should lend out like a helping hand and, you know, encourage them to keep going, because, you know, you're always going to be tested in so many different ways. But, you know, yeah, that's right there deep on so many levels.
100. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so I know we've done this big circle and like hit so many points, but with purpose, don't look at those people that are like, oh wow, those people look like they're living their life on purpose, and they know what their purpose is. They're no better than you.
Mm.
They're no worse than you, but they're no better than you. As long as today you can make that one step towards your purpose, and that is then what motivates us. It's not about me telling you and me having a chat every day going, go towards your purpose today, and then tomorrow go towards your purpose, and then the day after go towards your purpose. That's me motivating you.
Mm-hmm.
But what the difference between motivation and inspiration is I hope that through the way that I've languaged this, the way that it's been iterated, the way that we've articulated the different viewpoint of this, I hope that it's inspired you to pursue your purpose.
Exactly.
Right? So it's not a motivation. I'm not motivating you. I just hope that a light bulb went off in your head and you realized that it was possible.
Yeah.
You realize, hey, and I took the pressure off. That's the difference between inspiration and motivation.
You know, and I'm really glad you defined that, because, you know, we can all be motivated all the time, but to be inspired to, like, actually, to actually just execute, take action, is like on a whole nother level. Because, of course, it kind of goes even further back, where you were saying earlier, like the high, you know, you get motivated, the rah-rah and all that, and then you're back crashing low. But if you get inspired, or as you said, that light bulb goes off, to actually take action, take those steps, then you get ahead so much further than the rest. Because unlike, you know, just standing in that one spot, fearing the unknown and all that, always requiring that, you know, external, you know, motivation, you're saying, like, you know what, I know I can do this. I see others can do this. Why can't I be that person, you know, up there with the greatness? So I believe that this is possible. I see my purpose. I'm not going to stop. And you actually take those steps to make it happen. And that's when I believe, like,
yes,
you just take a whole nother different level.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that idea, that inspiration, then becomes the purpose.
The
purpose for why we're doing whatever action you take. You leave a seminar, you shouldn't. I mean, yes. Again, let me say this. I'm not against motivation, but motivation is the byproduct, not the selling product.
Gotcha.
I'll say that again. Motivation is a byproduct, not what I'm selling. That, yes, listening to me, joining me on my lives, listening to my podcast, seeing me on stage, working with me one-on-one, I want you to feel motivated,
mm-hmm,
but I'm not selling you that.
True, exactly.
I'm selling you the ideas. I'm selling you the concepts. I'm selling you the execution, the inspiration, because most people are trying to chase motivation. They're like, I just need that motivation. No, you don't. You just need the inspiration. You need the idea. Now, a lot of people have ideas, but they don't know how to make that idea work. And that's why they then need another idea to make their idea work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the inspiration is. And that's what we should aim to be. If anyone is aspiring to be a speaker, an influencer on social media, a writer of a book, if they want to be a leader, the whole idea is not about trying to motivate people. Don't chase being a motivational speaker. Don't ever come to me and say, I want to be a motivational speaker.
Yeah, we already got your warning earlier. They better be red to bob and weave.
Trust me, you should see my long rant to people. That you, I just unload.
It's like, uh-oh, like, you done it now.
But I want you to come to me and say, I really want to inspire people about X. That is what the modern day speaker is. Now, because the thing is in the olden days, you know, motivational speakers became really popular through the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Through the 2000s, it became really commercial.
Right.
And then from 2010 onwards, it started to decline, because now everyone
wants
to be a motivational speaker.
It's common now.
Yeah, exactly. So, and also, I believe we as a culture, we as a society have evolved that we no longer want that hoorah. We're saying, yeah, give me value. And the value comes in the inspiration, the idea, the walking out going, I know what to do now. I know how to put this idea that I've had floating around in my head, I know how to execute it now.
Yeah, instead of being like, oh yeah, I'm hyped up, what's next? Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm going to take on the world, you know? Like,
and then like, we'd be like, how?
Yeah. Brain, what are we going to do tonight? The same thing we do every night. Think, try to take over the world.
Yes, it's all about a change of mindset.
Old school cartoon reference. Do you know what that one is, Chris?
Oh, man, help me out, because I feel like it's there, but just go ahead and put it out.
I guess there was this old cartoon called Pinky and the Brain.
Yes, that's what it was. I was like, where does that sound? It sounds so familiar. And then when I was like, oh, yeah, Pinky and the Brain.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
So it's not about motivation. It's about inspiration. Motivation should be a byproduct.
Right.
Definitely. But the motivation actually comes just from our energy, from our passion. And when I say energy and passion, it doesn't mean you need to be loud like me. It doesn't mean you need to be hoorah like Tony Robbins. It doesn't mean you need to swear like Gary Vee. What it means is you need to be you, and your love for that outcome, your love for that topic, your love for solving that problem should just ooze from you in your authentic manner.
And I think that for is me, like when you really the go. Just explode, because you're being yourself and there can't be nobody else to replace 100%.
You. Nope. Exactly. That's why if we're just posting the same motivational quotes as everyone else is on social media, how are we meant to influence people? How are people meant to know our us? When we go and I see motivational speakers on stage, and all what they're doing is they're just regurgitating the same thing over and over again. I'm like, what makes you different? Yeah. Nothing. The thing that makes us different is our story and our personality, our authenticity, and the unique purpose that we've been called to fulfill.
Exactly. Like 100. Oh man!
So that was a really long introduction.
I feel like
that's me.
I'm not mad at that at all, because we hit on so many different points. I feel, just to let y'all know, we had like three original questions, but I feel like we just covered all of that and more in the introductions.
when you first emailed me and emailed me all those questions, when I responded to you and said, cut those back, were you a little bit, what's this guy about? Was it take back a little bit?
No, because I know everybody has their own different kind of takes. So I was just like, let me see how this goes, see how he's going to go with it.
I told you we'd go deep, man.
Yeah, you definitely went deep. I'm trying to see which go ahead.
Let's do one more question. That was a bit of and I know we sort of covered a few things there, but that was a real introduction to me. And you know, maybe if we want to go deeper into other topics, I'm happy to look at doing another interview at a later stage with you. But let's do one question. What is one more question that you think you would love to answer out of the questions that we just asked, or out of stuff we've already covered? What's one more question you'd like answered?
I feel like you hit a lot of different things. Other than that, I feel like one question. Are we going to this one? Actually, I'm just kind of making it off the top of my head. Like, what is the definition of a leader? Like, what is, like, when you see this, like, okay, that's a leader.
Okay, so when someone asks me that, I see this meme, right? That you've probably seen 1,000 times of these footprints walking up this upper beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this quote over it. If you're leading and no one's following, then you're just going for a walk.
Oh man, that yeah.
So there's a lot of people call themselves leaders, but if there's no one following them, then they're not a leader. If people are leading, if people have people that they are leading, and those people are only following that person because of the paycheck or because of the incentive or because of the benefit they're going to get out of it, they're simply a manager, not a leader.
Oh, damn. That right there might have hit somebody hard, but it's truth.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize.
I apologize, but I really don't. I don't apologize for who I am, but I'm just throwing that out there. That, I'm sorry, but some of these things hurt. The truth hurts, right?
Right.
So for me, a leader, and I could go on for days. Like I do workshops and programs and stuff all around leadership. And so I could just drop so many different things here, but to cut it short, I think a leader and maybe the most valuable thing to share is the change in leadership over the last probably 10 years.
Okay.
In the last decade or two, leadership has changed. Right. Leadership used to be dictatorship.
Yeah.
Now, leadership is facilitation.
Hmm. Interesting.
Leadership used to be dictation. Used to be, do this because I said.
Yeah.
I'm the boss, so you'll listen to me. When your kids ask you, why do I have to clean up my room? Because I said so.
Exactly.
Right, that's dictatorship. Where we are now not in a society of dictatorship. That is the technical term for that is as vertical leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Where it all comes from the top and everyone below has to follow.
Follow. Yeah, as soon as you said that, I just saw the vision of it. So yeah.
Yeah. But now we're in what we call more of a horizontal leadership, where a couple examples of this are, like, for example, Facebook, when they have their big meetings, mm-hmm. like big company meetings, even the coffee boy has access to their executive meetings.
Right.
Everyone has access and everyone has equal contribution. Not everyone has equal voting rights. Like, obviously, the executives still have to vote and they need to make the decision for best. But everyone can contribute their ideas
mm-hmm.
equally.
Right.
Because Mark Zuckerberg was interviewed about this one day and they asked him about, hang on a second, like, what is this? And he goes, you never know what idea the coffee boy may have that may be the next $1 billion idea.
And I like that kind of thing because you never know. The person that you may put down all the time may be the one key answer that you need.
Exactly. And so there's actually, to go on a little bit of a tangent, there's this thing called creative abrasion, mm-hmm. which a lot of corporations are doing now where during their executive board meetings, they hire an actor, an artist, a musician, someone who is a real creative type and someone who has zero experience and knowledge about their product, service, or industry.
Okay.
And that person sits in on the board meeting and has equal say to everyone else, not equal voting rights, right, because obviously voting still comes up. But mm-hmm. when they're discussing, when they're coming up with ideas, when they're trying to problem solve, that person has equal contribution. And the advantage of that is that person can see it from a completely different viewpoint. And too often we get caught up, we as leaders get too caught up in our world, in our perspective, that we miss things.
Exactly. Of like what's going on in actual real life, besides exactly. what you see in your exactly. database.
Yeah. Like I know what's going on in my world, but in reality, I don't know what's going on out there. Like I get too caught up in my world. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I don't care about any other. Like sometimes like we get like that, right? We're like, I don't care about anyone else. It's all about me.
me. So,
exactly. So the concept is that that as a leader now, we need to be trying to facilitate everyone's contribution. That we are no longer, I'm the boss and you do what I say. everyone equally contributes because everyone has their unique strengths.
Right.
Everyone has something different to bring to the table. The coffee boy, his strength is the fact that he's not an executive and he probably spends more time on Facebook than the executives.
Exactly.
The coffee boy probably speaks to all his friends and knows what they want and don't want out of Facebook.
Or,
the executives don't.
Or just to put it like this, I'm going to use McDonald's because McDonald's is like a very known example. Or like, let's say the executive of McDonald's may look at all the numbers, the profit, stuff like that. But the people who, let's say the regular crew people in the restaurants actually communicating with the people, serving them food, can know how they actually feel about the franchise. And that's like very 100. Key information. It's like, you know, of course your numbers are lining up, but you got to know how they actually feel about your franchise or this may hurt you long term if you don't fix it.
100. 100. Most definitely. Wait, so we as leaders are no longer infallible.
Right.
We are no longer know-it-alls. A leader nowadays is not the person that knows everything. A leader is someone who can help. Okay, so look, a quote from Lee Iacocca, okay. Right? Now, he was the CEO of Chrysler. Back in the day when Chrysler was about to go out of business, back in, I think this was back in the 70s or so.
Had a stress with it.
Yeah. Like they were about to go out of business. He was put in charge, and he turned them around and made them the giant that they are now. And he was interviewed by a news reporter, and the news reporter said, "Wow, for you to turn that around, you must have been so smart." Now here's the really cool thing: good leadership has been the same now and forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what's been accepted is now, people are now no longer accepting dictatorship.
Exactly.
Right? And so I say that because I'm talking about something that happened back in the 70s. So Lee Iacocca, I answered, and his response was, "No, I'm not smart. I just surround myself with smart people."
Thank you.
So this is the thing. Like, even back then, that was proper leadership, right? Like, it's been around for years. I can even go back to the Bible times and talk about proper leadership, right? Because leadership has been the same. It always has and always will be the same. Except for society has just accepted poor leadership for too long.
Especially with the internet, everything's so fast-paced.
Exactly. Like, I think now people are being called out more. People are now more aware of, now I know what's a good leader and what's not a good leader. Now I can see that Richard Branson or the Gary Vee or that, you know, like all these people, like I can see how they're leading. My boss doesn't lead like that. And so people are being, social media has just shone a spotlight on all poor behavior. It hasn't made behavior any worse. It's just shone a spotlight on it.
Yeah, exactly, because it's always been there. It's just been ignored. But now with the internet, it's not like, you can't ignore it now. It's like, may say this may person be the best boss, manager, whatever, but compared to what this other person is doing and has so much more accomplishments, he's not doing so good.
Exactly. So for me, that's leadership. To break in, years and years of leadership experience and days and days of leadership workshops, I would say that the first key is us understanding that a good leader is not the person who knows it all. It's not the best player on the field. Let me give you another analogy, and then I'll wrap it up. I've always been a leader. I was always school captain. I was captain of my sports teams. I was anything that there was a captain for, I was it.
Okay.
Now, I was chosen as captain because all of those teachers, the coaches, all my leaders saw leadership potential in me, and they saw that I was a leader. So I've always had leadership on me. However, I misunderstood what leadership was because I was always the best player. I was always the best performer. I was was always the best in the class. I was always the best, whatever it was. I was, and this is not me bragging. I just, you know, I was always the best. Mm-hmm. And so I assumed that I was being called captain because I was the best player.
Best class, yeah.
And so I felt that being captain was about performing best on the field. And so I did. I outperformed time and time again. But it wasn't until I started leading a volunteer organization. And so I ended up being put in charge of a team of about 10 people in a volunteer organization. And I thought, you know what, I'm a leader. I can do this. And obviously they saw the leadership potential in me. That's why they put me in a leadership position. I, for the first couple of months, I was the best performer on that team. Because I figured that that's what a leader was. They're first. I was their last. I was doing everything for everyone. I wasn't asking anyone else there to do anything because I was like, hey, I'm going to lead the way because I'm going to do it all. I'm going to show that I can do it. I'm going to be the best one. I'm going to be the best performer. We're going to run around.
That almost sounds like me.
But I felt that that's what leadership was being the best performer. So I was.
Mm-hmm.
But these people are following me because I'm the best performer. And to a certain extent, they followed me because I was the best performer. To a certain extent, they followed me because of my charisma.
Mm-hmm.
But that only took me so far. They started to complain. The team didn't end up growing any further.
Oh.
There started to be problems. And so my mentor pulled me in and they said, Craig, you're a great leader. But the problem is you're so focused on doing the task, on being the best performer, that you're failing as a leader. And I realized in that moment that leadership is about people, not tasks. That I realized that I was trying to lead a team by performing the task better and making sure the task was done effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But when I let go of that and focus on the people and not the task, found the people to perform the task, found the people and found their strengths, worked with people, built relationships with them, got to know them, got to understand what motivated them, got to understand where they wanted to be, where they didn't want to be, and managed that. I ended up managing people instead of tasks, and I then became a leader of over 300 volunteers.
Definitely
some. I went out and grew something from having two people that followed me up to over 150 people within 12 months. Completely volunteer, right?
Amazing.
Because I made that transition in my mindset that I thought that the leader had to be the best player.
Not necessary.
They didn't.
And I'm going to throw this example too. Like, so many times, like, oh, I'm going to have to hit sports. Like, you've seen so many sports out there, like, with a team, they may have this best player, he's outperformed, breaking out of records. They say, oh, that's all great, but what's your team overall? Oh, we have a losing record. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Like, he's not looking so great now. So it actually, like, to tie everything up what you just said, is like, even you can be a great player, but if you can actually get your other players to execute, focus on their strengths, and let that person, even though they may have a weakness, but make that their strength so that the whole team as a whole stands strong together and almost unbreakable, it makes a huge amount of difference.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yes.
And there's, you will notice it's on this sporting analogy, because it is the perfect analogy, you will notice that a star player will rise through the ranks and they will be performing really well. But when they're announced to captain, you will notice their stats drop.
Whole different role.
Because then they realize that, hey, I need to be focused not as all about my performance, which obviously they're still part of a team,
mm-hmm.
but and they've got to be a team player. But as a captain, it's their role to not just increase their performance, but everyone else's performance. But a good captain, one of those star players, their stats will drop a little, right?
Right.
But the whole team will rise.
That's like seeing the bigger picture.
Exactly. Exactly. And so with leadership, going back to what we were talking about, it's not all about me. It's not about being the best player. It's not about I'm the boss and just do it because I say so. No, it's our responsibility to help build up, raise up other people, find ways to help other people see their advantages, help other people to see where their strengths are and help them perform within those areas. That's what a good leader is.
Yes, and raising everybody up together. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a thing in leadership that we say, raise and release. Raise and release. Because most leaders are too insecure to actually release. They may raise a leader up, but they put a lid on them. Because they raise them up to just under them. They won't let them overtake them.
But I'm going to add on to that. But if you're willing to raise a person up, and so that that person can lead, you leave a legacy which won't be forgotten.
100%.
Yep.
In my organization, I encourage people. My thing was, like, you need to replace yourself. Your number one goal as a leader is to replace yourself. Because when you replace yourself, people think that I replace myself when I'm out of a job. No. If you replace yourself, you've just created a whole other job on another level for yourself.
Exactly. Taking it to a whole nother, like, next level. It's just exactly like, yeah, accepting that, and it's part of the growth process. So very huge onto that. Man, I feel like we hit a lot of different, we can hold a whole different workshop on itself with the way we just pretty much covered and more. Released a book. We got a couple of quotes coming out there. May see a couple of memes. I'm just all goofy. But with with that said, I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. As you all know, it is Chris Holmes, your host of Next Level Thinking. You have gotten a tremendous amount of value through listening through this, from leadership to inspiration and just executing and, you know, building up a team so they can execute and see in the bigger picture. There's so much nuggets in this whole conversation. I hope that you take this and keep sharing it, because, you know, the key thing with knowledge and information is to share with others so they can grow. Again, this is Chris Holmes, and I have my guest by the name of
Craig O'Sullivan.
And we're out. Next Level Thinking. Peace. Another.